Pleasant evening to you. I'm Gregston Seeley. Welcome to another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Sunday evening, time for some more information. And to share that with us, you've got Dr. Kia Lewis. She's on deck this evening. And of course, she has her guest ready and raring to go to make sure that you are better informed as we are finished by this evening's, at the end of this evening's proceedings. So let's say a special good evening to Dr. Lewis and her guest. Good evening, ladies.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, please. Everybody's fine, right?
Everybody's fine. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad.
Always a privilege to be in virtual studio with you.
Good to have you, by the way. Always good to have you.
Good, good. So I want to say a warm welcome to our listeners here on the Better Health Show this evening. As you know, this is a show which is aimed at raising public awareness of common health issues that affect us all. It's my pleasure, as always, to be your host this evening. And we are always looking forward to an engaging and interactive session. We try to keep the sessions interesting and topical, but you are a big, big part of this show. We can't do it without you. And so we want to take this opportunity to remind you that you can contact us with your questions and comments either by calling 434-1790. That's 434-1790. For those who are a little radio shy, you can always message us at 266-4862. That's 266-4862. So without any further ado, I want to introduce the topic for this evening. This evening, we are going to be looking at glaucoma. We're going to be looking at glaucoma because we know we're celebrating World Glaucoma Week. And the theme this year is "The World is Bright, Save Your Sight." Very important theme because we know that glaucoma is the leading cause of irreversible blindness in the world. And it's the leading cause of irreversible blindness here in Barbados as well. So this is something that you definitely want to hear about. And as usual, we have our experts on board with us. We like to have the best of the best. And so I'm going to introduce you to our guest, Dr. Dawn Govner. She is a graduate of the University of the West Indies, Faculty of Medical Sciences. Thereafter, she went on to specialize in ophthalmology in England for several years, and later specifically focused on the specialty area of glaucoma. She did her glaucoma training at Moorfields Eye Hospital in London, with an emphasis on surgical management of complex glaucomas. She then returned to Barbados in 2010 and started the Glaucoma Surgery Specialty Service in the Ophthalmology Department at the QEH. She is the University of the West Indies lecturer in ophthalmology, along with her work in glaucoma at QEH. She has a passion for glaucoma education, lectures widely on glaucoma, both to health professionals and general audiences. Welcome, Dr. Grosvenor. It's a pleasure to have you on the program this evening.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Good, good. So we're going to start the ball rolling. One of the biggest things that we need to understand is what glaucoma actually is. We hear a lot about it, but what is glaucoma?
That's a great place to start. Glaucoma is a disease that affects the nerve of the eye. And there are quite a few misconceptions about what glaucoma really is. People think that when they have a high eye pressure, that automatically is glaucoma. Sometimes people confuse other eye diseases with it. Sometimes people think, I have a pain at the back of my head, so that's glaucoma, because they hear that the nerve is at the back of the eye. But really, glaucoma is a silent disease. It's painless for the most part. Asymptomatic, so no symptoms. You might not know you have it, because the damage that is caused to the nerve, to the eye, is silent. It's painless. Now, glaucoma affects the nerve of the eye, and we only have one nerve in each eye. It's called the optic nerve. It's at the back of the eyeball and connects the eyeball to the brain. So it's deep inside our skull, deep inside the head. It's not at the back of the head. It's deep inside the head. So if you have a headache at the back of your head, that is not glaucoma, right? We think that it's the high pressure in the eye that's slowly impacting on the nerve inside the eyeball over time, and that is what causes the damage, right? The damage from glaucoma is very subtle. as the nerve is affected, that nerve is responsible for how we see. So you can imagine that if you're getting damage to the nerve, something must be happening to your vision. But it happens in the part of the vision that is very subtle, that where we don't even notice it, out to the side in our peripheral vision. Like what we talk about, what we say when we talk about seeing out of the corner of your eye, you saw something out of the corner of your eye, or you saw a movement or some person approach you out of the corner of your eye, and you turn your head to look. That area of your vision, that corner of your eye, the peripheral vision, that is where the glaucoma damage shows up very subtly. And that is not vision we use very often. Most of the time when we're reading, watching the TV, driving, we're using our vision right in the center. But the peripheral vision, that can be significantly damaged in glaucoma. And people will only notice any change in the vision after they've lost about 90% of the peripheral vision, and things have got so bad that it's starting to affect that central vision that we use every day to look at, you know, things right straight ahead of us to function. The important thing that I like people to remember when we think about what glaucoma is to remember that it's the nerve of the eye that's affected, that it's usually associated with a high eye pressure, not always, because some people can still get this damage to the nerve at a lower eye pressure, but the majority of people with glaucoma have a high eye pressure, and that it's silent and asymptomatic. So early detection is important.
Great. Dr. Grumley, you've really started straight out to the blocks. You've given us a lot to think about there. And one of the things I want to emphasize with the listeners is the silent nature of this disease, yeah? But something we always ask, how common is glaucoma? Because obviously we're sitting here, there's a week associated with it. We're sitting here having a conversation about it. So why is it even important to talk about it? How commonly does this affect persons?
You know, it's a very common eye disease in Barbados. And I'm sure that most listeners, if they don't have glaucoma themselves, they have a family member with it, a coworker, a friend, someone in their circle that they're aware of. Pretty much everyone in Barbados must know somebody else that has glaucoma, because it's very common here. We have one of the highest prevalence levels of glaucoma, which means that for a population our size, the number of people with glaucoma proportionally is very high, one of the highest in the world. We know this from research that was conducted through the University of the West Indies Chronic Disease Research Center back in the 80s and extending into the 90s and even the early 2000s, where they looked at our whole population over the age of 40 to see, you know, what percentage of people had glaucoma. And they found that 7% of people had glaucoma, 7% over the age of 40. If you calculate that from our population, it's thousands of people. And that number, that burden continues today. Glaucoma is a chronic disease. So once you have it, you need to have monitoring and treatment for life. So that puts a bit of a burden on the eye care services. So even within our eye clinics and our practices, a large proportion of that work is persons with glaucoma. So it is very common here and very important. Another level of importance is that it's also the number one, the leading cause of irreversible blindness in Barbados and around the world. But I always twin that piece of news with some good news, that just because you have glaucoma does not mean that you have to go blind. Not at all. It is possible through early detection and effective treatment to save your sight, even if you have glaucoma.
Excellent, excellent. You always have to tack on some good news of hope. We don't want really doom and gloom people. So that's excellent. And I like the fact that you took the percentage to 7%, because that sounds like 7%, but you translated that into a number. You really are looking at thousands of people, and that is significant. There's another question I want to ask. We think about glaucoma, we think about, you know, maybe one type of glaucoma. Are there other types of glaucoma?
There are quite a few different categories of glaucoma, so much so that when we talk about it in the eye care arena, we talk about it as a group of diseases. What they all have in common is damage to the nerve of the eye in this particular way and causing damage to the visual field or the peripheral vision. But they can be associated with high eye pressure with no apparent underlying cause. That's primary open angle glaucoma. That's the most common one and the one that we see the most of in Barbados. Then we have another kind, narrow angle glaucoma or angle closure glaucoma, that can even sometimes present as an emergency. That is a lot less common, but that is another group. Then we have the glaucomas that result from something that has happened to the eye before, secondary glaucoma. So maybe you had an injury in childhood and then years later that eye develops glaucoma. Or maybe you had a serious injury recently and then that goes on to be complicated by glaucoma. Maybe you have another chronic eye condition like very bad diabetic eye disease, or you've had some previous kind of eye surgery that can then later on be complicated by glaucoma. So that group of secondary glaucomas is very important as well. And then the last category is the childhood glaucomas. Thankfully, those are very rare. And often when you hear us talking about awareness for glaucoma, we really are talking about glaucoma in adults, because glaucoma in children behaves very differently. It affects the eye in a way that is very visible to parents. So usually, if a child is developing glaucoma, usually the parents will notice that something is going on. It affects the sight quickly. It affects the appearance of the eyeball very quickly. So that's a special category all of its own. So they're definitely different types. And what they all have in common, even the childhood ones, is that damage to the nerve.
Right. You mentioned something. You talked about how you can have these secondary glaucomas where there's injury to the eye, or, for example, somebody who has very bad diabetic eye disease. These are things that we don't think about. And considering the large burden of glaucoma in the island, I wondered if you could share with our listeners the risk factors. What really puts a person at risk for developing glaucoma?
All right. Well, I will talk about the risk factors for the primary glaucoma. And these are risk factors that, they seem like very minor things and they apply to a lot of us, right? So increasing age. And unfortunately, a lot of these risk factors are not things we can reverse about ourselves. The Barbados eye studies showed that the prevalence of glaucoma, the number of people or the proportion of people with glaucoma, increases with increasing age. So we said it's 7% over the age of 40. And that's really maybe many times more than in populations up north in the UK and US, for example, where it's only 1% to 2%. So we have many times over the proportion. But as you increase in age, over the age of 50 now, you're affecting 1 in 11 persons. So you're almost 10% of the population over 50. And then as you increase in age again, over the age of 70, 1 in 6 persons. And it continues to become more and more common as you increase with age. The other important thing is family history. If having a family member with glaucoma, so if someone in your family has glaucoma, then everybody else in that family automatically has an increased risk, because it suggests that somewhere within the family is that, you know, an internal risk factor, perhaps a genetic risk factor. The closer that family member is to you, the higher the risk. We can't always quantify and say it's, you know, 10% more or 20% more, but it's sufficient to know that the risk is higher because it means you have to be more vigilant and check for glaucoma. So, for example, if you have a parent with glaucoma, then you definitely have a higher risk than if you had a second cousin with glaucoma, right? But whoever, as long as you have it in your family, there's a definite increased risk. So far we've had age. We can't really change that. We can't slow down that aging process so far. We have our family, right? We can't change the family that we're born into. The other things are our race. People of African descent, particularly West African descent, have a very high prevalence of glaucoma. And we see that reflected in the diaspora. So this whole Caribbean region, and we see that in the diaspora in the UK, Europe, and in the US as well, a higher risk for glaucoma. An interesting thing in the eye studies was that men had an increased risk compared to women of glaucoma. So we always try to highlight the men. It's really important, you know, to when you're getting your other health checks as you get a bit older, over the age of 40, and you're doing your checks for the prostate, which you should be doing, and your diabetes and your hypertension checks, cholesterol, all those wellness things, you have to remember glaucoma as well. And those are the main ones. High eye pressure now is actually also a risk factor for developing glaucoma, because you could have a high eye pressure and not have glaucoma yet, but it could be a risk factor for developing it down the line. And those are the risk factors, those sort of the internal risk factors for the primary glaucomas. Persons who are short-sighted, and you would know that if you wear glasses, and short-sighted means you're nearsighted. So without your glasses, you can see things very close to you, but you need your glasses to see further away. That is a risk factor for primary glaucoma as well.
You mentioned a number of risk factors, but there are two that I want to really highlight to our listeners. The whole thing of family history, if you are a regular listener on Better Health, you will recognize a trend. Many of the conditions that we discuss, there's a strong family history tends to be a risk factor. And we always take the opportunity to remind you that even though all families are not the same, everybody does not feel happy to share health information. Where you can help another relative by sharing a condition that you have so that they are aware, especially in the closer ring of the family, yeah, your immediate relatives. That is important because it can encourage persons to screen for it earlier. It can help them to live a slightly healthier lifestyle. And then we're always appealing to the men. I kind of smiled when you said, men, when you're getting older and you're getting your health checks, so they thought, which health checks, you know? Because many times we know the men run from the doctor up to this week, a man sat in my office and said, you know, I don't like doctors. And that is true. He was brave enough to tell me. But that is true for many men. They either don't really like the experience of going to the doctor, or sometimes, you know, they kind of feel as though they're invincible and all is well until something breaks down. So we want to highlight to the men this evening, please, you are at higher risk of developing glaucoma. So get yourself checked, both men and women, but specifically we're appealing to men. With that said, you made it clear to us, because one of my questions was, how can glaucoma preventable? Is it preventable? So I'm just going to throw that out there. I know the complications of glaucoma are preventable, but is glaucoma itself preventable?
The primary glaucomas are not preventable, right. Unfortunately. It's one of those chronic diseases that if you're going to get it, you're probably going to get it. But what you can change is the outcome and the effect it has on you and your life. Part of the reason we suspect it's not preventable is that there seems to be a genetic component to developing glaucoma. So many genes have been identified that are linked to the development of glaucoma. Unfortunately, it's not just one gene or something you could test for, because there's so many that are implicated, and it's the combination of genes, because there are some genes that will inhibit glaucoma, and there are some that will, you know, potentiate its development, encourage its development. And it just depends on that particular combination of genes that you have inherited. So if you have inherited the combination that is leading to glaucoma, that is very likely going to happen, but you can detect it early enough so that it doesn't have an effect on your life in terms of losing your sight. And that early detection message is really important, not for just for yourself, but for the next generation. You can change the outcome. So many times in families, I see where parents may have been picked up late. The glaucoma was detected late because, you know, back in the day, we didn't know as much as we know now. We didn't have as many sources of information. Our treatments were different. So they may have had an outcome that's not as good, affecting their eyesight. And if, you know, that point you made earlier with sharing your that health information with your family members, if parents share that with their children and encourage them to get tested, you can change that trajectory for your family. So your children don't have to lose vision the same way that you have lost it. Even for siblings, if you have multiple siblings and you're someone who has glaucoma, encourage your other siblings to go and get checked for it, because you might have similar genes, and just because they haven't shown it yet doesn't mean that they never will. They have to, you know, keep checking, get checked early and keep checking all the time, because it's so important to change that outcome for others. That's one sort of paying it forward that people can really do, a kindness you can pass on to your family that costs you nothing. What an inheritance, right? Just by sharing that information and encouragement, you give them the inheritance of good vision. So important.
Excellent point. I think that we really need to get back to the community aspect of healthcare, where it's not just about the individual looking after themselves, where it's not just at the level of the doctor or the nurse, But really, we're looking after each other. We're looking out for each other. We're saying, you know, I stumbled this place. You don't have to. Or I have this condition. Let me help you. You know, and that's really, really important, that community interaction, that interaction within the family. So excellent points made there. Now, I know we talked about the risk factors for glaucoma. You would have mentioned screening. I think it's above the age of 40 you mentioned. But I'm going to give you the opportunity. Who should be screened for glaucoma? Is it everybody? You know, everybody should be screened. Is it just persons who have a positive family history, i.e. somebody in their family who has it? Who should be screened for glaucoma?
I think ideally everyone who is an adult in Barbados, so I would say age 21 and over, you should get a check for glaucoma because the prevalence is so high that what we are seeing is that it's coming, that we're seeing younger and younger persons being affected. So traditionally and in other countries that don't have as high a level of glaucoma as Barbados, you will hear the advice, get checked from the age of 40 onwards or the age of 65 onwards. But when glaucoma comes down through a family, if it happens to another a younger generation, it tends to happen 10 years earlier. There's very good research proving that. So that if, you know, one generation got it in their 60s, the next is 50s, coming down 40s, 30s, and you see where we're going with that. And because you might not be so aware of our distant family history going all the way back, the best thing to do in our scenario is to get checked early. We are seeing people in their 20s developing glaucoma, in their 30s with glaucoma. I have people in their 40s going blind from glaucoma. So, you know, it is real that this is happening before age 40. And so my advice generally is to say that if you're over the age of 21, if you're an adult in Barbados, get a check for glaucoma. If that check is completely normal, then you might not need to have that looked at again for 3 years, 5 years, depending on your risk level and family history and those other things. If, however, the doctor picks up something suspicious, even if it might not be a diagnosis at that time, but they pick up, oh, you have some risk factors from the appearance of your eye and from talking to you, you realize you're at risk, then you know so early you're ahead of the game. And you can make sure that even if this is to develop, you are going to pick it up very early. So my advice is from adulthood, you need to be checked. Now, we don't screen children for glaucoma, but children should have their eyes checked for other reasons to make sure that, you know, they can see the information at school and that sort of thing. In terms of risk factors, if you have any of the risk factors, then you should be screened even more. It's more, even more important. It's not even a question, right? That you should be screened whatever age you're at, as in at 21 and over. If you have a family history of glaucoma, if you're short-sighted, if you are male, right? Any of those things, particularly if you have a combination of all those things, then you should be screened even more intensely.
Gregston, I understand that we have our first caller on the line.
Yes, please. Go right ahead, caller.
Good evening, caller. Welcome to Better Health.
Yes. Good evening, doctor. And good evening to Dr. Grosvenor, Dr. Emeritus.
Good evening.
Dr. Grosvenor, I understand every single thing that you've said, but still, I want to ask you a question. In recent years, they have been finding cures for some kinds of cancer that could actually, well, not really reverse 100%. But it can cause you to live for a long, long period of time. I want to know if there's anything for glaucoma or cataract that can cause you, that can cause your sight to be halted in such a way that you can, you know, you'll be able to reduce the medication you take, because eye medication costs up and the whole lot. It's very, very expensive. So I want to know how far the scientists and the doctors are with reference to doing something more tangible for people with glaucoma and cataracts. I would listen, and if we need to come back in, I would.
Okay, thanks for that question. I'll start with the everyday things that the things that are here now that we're doing that can make a difference, and then the things that are more advanced and maybe coming for the future someday, we hope. The caller mentioned eye drops, and that is traditionally the first line treatment for glaucoma. So if you're diagnosed, we check your eye pressure. If it's regardless of if it's high or if it's in the normal range, we try to lower it because the way to treat glaucoma is to lower the eye pressure, get it as low as we can and stable as we can without high level fluctuations. That takes the stress off the nerve and reduces any future damage to the nerve and helps to preserve your sight and stabilize it going forward, as long as we can achieve a low enough pressure, stable without fluctuations. Traditionally, the way to do that is with eye drops every day, which might be once a day, twice a day. Some people might have a combination of eye drops depending on the intensity of the severity of their glaucoma and the level of their eye pressure. And of course, eye drops may have side effects, especially if you have multiple ones and you're using them for 30 years of your lifetime, right? So what's here now is an alternative first line treatment called laser, which is laser treatment to the drainage system in the eye. It's called laser trabeculoplasty. That actually was around for quite some time, but you have some modern advances, new machines, and new ways of doing it, which allow that to be offered now as first line treatment for glaucoma. So that if a young person is diagnosed with glaucoma, we can offer them the option of laser treatment to lower the pressure before, as an option rather than going directly to eye drops. Now, the caveat with that is that the laser treatment doesn't work for everyone. So there are going to be glaucoma patients out there who perhaps were not offered that because it wasn't appropriate to you, or it wasn't relevant at the time, or it wasn't available in the center that you're in. It is because it's relatively new treatment, it also has a cost to it as well. So you won't find that necessarily in the public system at the moment, but those are advances that are available in the world now that we hope to bring into our arena, right, when we can. The other thing that's available for persons who, for example, have been on eye drops for many years and they're not working anymore, or they're not being as effective at bringing the eye pressure down, or you can't tolerate the eye drops anymore, surgery is what we can move to if we have to step up beyond eye drops. And some surgeries can allow persons to come off the eye drops. Some can allow persons to reduce the number of eye drops or the intensity and be more comfortable for them. So those are two things that are available now. And surgery is available, of course, in the public sector, laser treatment and surgery. Both of those can allow us to lower the pressure to an additional degree to help to preserve your sight. The futuristic stuff now, which is just being successes that are now coming to the lab environment in the first world. I apologize for the background noise if it's affecting you, is regeneration of the nerve in the eye. That damage that occurs to the nerve has been shown to be reversed in mice in an experimental environment in the US, one of the US labs. Now, that might sound like a small thing, growing back a tiny nerve in a tiny mouse, but that's a huge thing in glaucoma because that is the holy grail for glaucoma. The fundamental problem is damage to the nerve. And if we can reverse that damage by growing back those parts of the nerve that have been totally destroyed, then that represents reversal, restoration of vision, potentially a cure. That's huge. Now, don't get too excited now, because translating from tiny mice to human eyes can take a long time, if ever. There are similarities, but there's so many differences between mice eyes and human eyes. We don't know if you can translate that research from mice to humans, but at least we have a little hope that, okay, it's been done in one species. Maybe we can do it in us as well someday. So I say to glaucoma patients, look, the idea is that you do everything that you have to do now to preserve as much nerve as you can, so that if down the line some amazing cure is available, at least you have some nerve left that you can take advantage of it.
All right. Before Dr. Lewis continues, let me just offer this contribution here from the WhatsApp. It says, good evening. I went to the eye specialist for a routine yearly checkup. I found out I had early stages of glaucoma. She told me it was found early, and I'm lucky to have found it so early, as most people find out at a late or advanced stage. My problem is that I love reading and playing games late at night on the internet. Should I stop doing this? I am not diabetic, but I am treated for high blood pressure.
That's a great question. And one we get commonly, people, particularly people who are trying their best to be healthy, you don't want to do anything to, you know, damage your eyes or upset this balance. It's perfectly fine to read as much as you want to read, play as many video games as you want to, watch TV, read the newspaper. You're not going to wear your eyes out by using them, right? You're not going to wear them out by using them. That's like saying if you went to walk, you know, several miles, you know, if that would be harmful to your feet, you might get a bit tired and then you might have to rest them and go again, but the feet are still perfectly fine to function. That's their job. And it's the same thing for the eyes. You know, if you spend 5 hours playing video games or watching TV or reading, then your eyes may start to feel a bit tired. Maybe they get a bit dry. You can put some lubricant eye drops in, but you're not going to cause any damage that is going to be permanent in terms of glaucoma or anything like that. Use your eyes. I tell people, if you have good vision, use your eyes. Enjoy it.
Okay. Well, I guess that explanation answers the next query. It says, good evening. The fact that people spend so much time staring at screens and so much now that they're can that contribute to glaucoma? So I guess you answered that really by what you said prior to that one. I think I've got a call here on the line. Dr. Lewis, do you wish to engage?
Yes, always. Welcome, caller.
Good afternoon. I want to know what type of pressure, when you say pressure in the eyes, what type of pressure is that? Air pressure, blood pressure, what pressure?
Okay, good. The pressure in the eye is completely separate from your eye pressure, from your blood pressure, sorry. There's a fluid that is being produced to fill the eyeball all the time, to nourish the tissues on the inside of your eye. And as fast as that fluid is produced, it needs to drain away down the natural drainage system inside the eye. So you always have this circulation of fluid in the eye where it's being produced and it's being drained away. In glaucoma, the drainage system doesn't work very well. So that fluid backs up, and that's what causes the high eye pressure. It's purely due to the internal circulation of fluid in the eye.
So you say that it becomes a blockage in the eye? That it's not draining that much?
Correct. You can think of it that way, like a blockage. It's like if you have in your sink, you know, if you have the tap on, the hole there needs to be open all the time and working, right? And not just the hole needs to be open, but all the drains beyond the hole need to be open as well. So sometimes you see that when you look at your sink, the hole is open, but the fluid is still backing up. And that's because somewhere along the line, the drainage system isn't working as it should. That's what happens in glaucoma.
Yeah, so these drops supposed to clear this blockage?
Right. So the drops then help that drainage system to work a lot better. And some of the drops actually work by even turning down the tap and decreasing the amount of fluid that's coming into the eye or decreasing the speed that fluid is coming in so that even if your drainage system is a bit slow, it can handle it. The drops work on both sides to decrease the amount of fluid in the eye and lower the pressure.
So it's not blood pressure then?
It's not blood pressure, no. Controlling your blood pressure is still important because your eye is still a part of your body. And apart from this fluid circulation system, the eye has a separate blood supply system with some very tiny blood vessels. So the same way that high blood pressure can affect the blood vessels and other parts of the body, it can also affect those tiny blood vessels in the eye and cause a whole set of other problems. So we encourage people, and the same thing applies to diabetes, that can affect those tiny blood vessels and cause a whole set of other problems. So we usually say to people, even though the eye pressure is separate from these other things, you still have to control the other chronic diseases because they can still have an effect on the eye. And then if you add up all these problems, you end up with big problems in an eye, and we don't want that.
Another question. If you're a diabetic, and you have eye problems, and they call for a surgery, should they do the surgery if your sugar levels are high?
Oh boy, this is a difficult question. We try to, you have to weigh the balance, because we try to do surgery when you are in the perfect condition, right, to get it done. But we have to balance that with the importance and urgency of the surgery. Sometimes we have to proceed even when things aren't at the perfect level if it's so important. So, you know, this is not something that we could really, you know, that's not a question I could answer just on the radio. That's really a determination your doctor and you have to make at the time of surgery. And when we're approaching surgery and patients, we are making that judgment all the time and discussing with patients, weighing up the risks of proceeding versus the benefits of proceeding, the risks of waiting versus the benefit of waiting. And really only your doctor that has seen your eye and knows the situation can do that. There's situations where we have to proceed even when the sugar is not perfect. And then there's situations where we have the option of waiting. So it's very individual.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. We had a couple more callers, but they've left it up. As soon as I say that, here comes another one.
All right.
Go ahead.
We like to have callers. Good evening, caller. Welcome.
Hello, good afternoon. Hello, good evening. Yes, I have advanced glaucoma in my eyes. And past the nerve of my eyes is damaged. I do about 2 vaginal biopsy tests, and they say that I only have a little light inside the middle. The 2 sides is dark. So when that darkness go from, when the light go from the middle, it's all over. I need 6 sector drops in my eyes a day, plus 1 tablet twice a day. So I want to know if I could get an operation or something to help my sight.
Okay.
Yeah, before you answer, Doc, let me just advise our callers that we welcome your calls, but remember to turn your radio down when you call us, because then what you're saying goes back through your phone, causes all that noise you just heard, and we don't want that, all right? So please turn your radio down when you get through to us. Go ahead, Doc.
Thank you. So this is a question now, which is really for your doctor, because it depends on the situation in your eye, whether surgery is a consideration or whether it will be too risky. You said that you have advanced glaucoma and there's only a small area on the visual field test that's remaining. And sometimes when there's such a small area, it can be too risky to proceed with surgery. But coming back to that answer I was given to the caller before about weighing up the risk of proceeding versus the benefit to you. What we're trying to do with glaucoma surgery, we can't reverse the damage. That damage that's already been done is there, it's irreversible. All we can do is, if your tablets and your drops together are not keeping your eye pressure low enough, that's when we think about surgery. Now, if you're on all these drops and all these tablets and they're keeping your pressure at a perfect level, and in this situation with advanced glaucoma, we would not advise going into your eye to do surgery, because that puts you at risk of complications that we can't predict. One of those complications, even though it's rare, is an infection or bleeding, which could make the vision worse in the short term. On the other hand, if you're on all these drops and all these tablets and your pressure is still too high or fluctuating widely, then it might be beneficial to say, okay, well, you only have a small amount of vision. We know there's a small risk, but there can be a much bigger benefit to you in terms of saving that vision in the long term. Only your doctor will know, depending on your particular situation. My role for the most part is doing glaucoma surgery. So there are many times I have to have those difficult conversations with patients, because only the individual with glaucoma can make that decision based on, you know, with us, based on the information we give, because there is a risk there and it is your eye at the end of the day. Sometimes we have to say it's too risky, you know, for us to even go into the eye, because your eye still has to be able to withstand the surgery and recover the next day. And Sometimes if your the amount of sight you have is so small, we can tell that if we go into this eye at all, we're not going to be able to do anything here. And we just have to try with the drops and the tablets in that situation. So you have to, this is a question to ask your doctor, and I encourage anybody out there who has that query, if they're on a lot of medication and they're thinking about, is surgery appropriate for me? Ask your doctor, because your doctor may already be in their mind making that risk and benefit determination. And that's a good and important discussion to have. And it tells you where you stand. You need to know clearly where you stand. We always say, I'm sure Dr. Lewis is the same, don't be afraid to ask questions of your doctor, because we don't know what's on your mind, and what we think you might want to hear might not be what you want to hear at all. So you have to tell us what's on your mind so we can, you know, allay those fears or answer those queries that are out there.
Okay, thank you very much, doctor. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
All right, there you go. Please be reminded, though, that when you call and you get through, just turn your radio down. I've got another one for you, doc.
Hello, hold on.
Okay, we'll hold for you.
Hello.
You ready for us? All right. There you go.
Morning. Hey, good night. Good night.
Yes, please. The doctor's going to hear you. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Doctor, I understand that is an injection that you can get injected in your eyes that can cause the glaucoma to go. I want to know if that's really true.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about this injection and what you know about it.
Well, all I know is some person say they went and they get, but said the first time, maybe twice or three times, different times, then went back again. And right now, their eyes going good.
Okay.
And, them saying this is glaucoma.
Right. That might be one of the secondary glaucomas called neovessel glaucoma or neovascular glaucoma that tends to be associated with retinal problems at the back of the eye. First, I'll say there's no injection that can take away your glaucoma, right? Even if they have that kind of glaucoma and they've been getting treatment with the injections, that treatment is not taking away their glaucoma, but it might be part of their treatment regimen for their retinal problem at the back of the eye. Because at the moment, we can use injections to help, for example, if you have diabetic eye problems or retinal complications from diabetes or other, like a blocked blood vessel, sometimes you can get injections into the eye to help to deal with complications of that. Those problems, diabetic eye disease and a blocked blood vessel, like a vein occlusion, a retinal vein occlusion, those things can cause one of the secondary glaucomas that is very difficult to control and very blinding. And the retinal specialist will often recommend a course of injections in the eye or sometimes laser treatment to help to deal with that underlying problem while they're dealing with the glaucoma with drops, the drop surgery or whatever. So it's not that the injection is going to take away the glaucoma, but it might be helping the situation in those particular instances.
Right, yeah. That might be leave through there. Anyhow, thanks, Ms. Grubner.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, thank you, caller. We've got another one for you, Doc. Very good evening to you.
Good evening.
Yes, go right ahead. I can hear you, please.
Okay, good, sir. Okay. Turn it over. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Turn it down there for us, and we're good to go after you're finished.
Yeah. Good evening to you, Father, and good evening to you, guys, sir.
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Yes, please. I have early glaucoma. Early. That was totally mm-hmm. daughter. I had 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I see very well. See very, very far, far too near. But when I go to the clinic to get a reading, they don't get all the numbers. See. So, you know what I'm saying? But I still see well all times. And I suppose that because it's poor. I draw every day. Every day I draw. Once a day. And it's happened a lot. But when I visit, it's soon. So when I go back, they will tell me what they're going to do. What up for me? And only that, I have to get glasses too, so. But I can see very well all the time. My mother have glaucoma, and my father and near family of mine. I understand what you said when you said if it's in family, like a parent, at a risk.
I really
you're right. But even I have a sister that have it. Mm-hmm. I don't know my brother. I don't know my brothers. I have two sisters, two brothers, but I don't know about them there. I know me and my sister.
So you're giving a really good example of, you know, the difference it can make if you know you have that family history and you get a check, diagnosed early, can still see well, you know, all those things are important. That's why we keep encouraging people to do exactly what you have done. Go and get the check, get the care. You know, you said that you are taking an eye drop every day. You said you're praying. You have to try to do everything that you can. And I encourage people to bring everything to the table, you know, exercise, eat healthy, do everything that's in your power to give yourself the best outcome. Don't do one set of things and not the other. Do it all together.
Farewell. Before you go, eye drops I'm using right now. They're very good. Very, very good. And I thank you all for helping people and doing your all work. And let me show you all well. And Greg, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, let me show you the best.
Thank you, sir. And you take care as well.
I'll call you listening.
Good. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Take care. I'll be careful.
All right, sir. All right. One satisfied caller there. Thank you for your contribution. We've got another one here. Let's see if I caught him in time. Good evening.
Good evening.
Ah, caught him in time. Yes. Good evening. Your doctors can hear you.
Hi, good evening.
Hello?
Good evening. Welcome, caller. Good evening.
Yes. I have glaucoma from since 1986. And I stay in seas every day. The only thing is I have cataract. So I would like to know how soon I should get them checked. Because when I first heard about, when my doctor told me I had glaucoma, I was going to England for a holiday. And when I got to England, my brother took me to the hospital to get a second opinion. And they told me, yes, I have glaucoma. But I had just realized that I had it. And they told me to use what I'm using. But the thing is, I didn't even stop to use the medication because I was given a dose to carry with me because I was going to spend a holiday with 3 months holiday with my brother. So they told me that I caught it in time. 1986. So up to now, my eyes are still good. The only thing is I have cataract. So I would like to know how soon I should get this cataract then because I...
Okay, that is a great question and a very common occurrence to have glaucoma and cataract because both of them come on with increasing age. So it's not uncommon that, you know, persons will develop both together. Deciding when to remove the cataract depends on the individual eye, not even the person, because each eye can behave very differently. It depends on the situation. We don't just remove a cataract because it's there, because the cataract is actually a completely different disease from the glaucoma, number one. It is a clouding of the natural lens of the eye. There's a structure inside the eye that is called the lens. It looks kind of like a magnifying glass. But inside the eye, and that's really what one of the things that's helping us to see really well. And as we age, that can get cloudier. And if it develops a certain level of cloudiness, we call that a cataract. Now, just because the lens gets a little cloudy and we diagnose the cataract doesn't mean that we're going to remove it with surgery. We're only going to do surgery if the benefit to the patient of removing it is going to be good for the patient. So we only tend to remove cataracts if they are affecting someone's vision or affecting how they function in life. And your doctor will be able to determine that with you, depending on what's happening. So that's a question again for your doctor. And this is a common thing that I'm saying this evening. That's a question for your doctor. So clearly patients have lots of questions for us doctors. And I know sometimes you might forget them when you get in with us because, you know, you're nervous about what we're going to say and etc. But I encourage people, if you have questions for your doctor, write them down as they come to your mind so that when you go, you can ask the questions. Yeah. Now, if you take 36 pages of questions, you might not be able to get them answered all in one go. You still have to be reasonable, but take some, you know, if you have a burning question on your mind, make sure you take them to your doctor. If you have a lot of questions, then you might have to take a few every time in order to get the situation for you clear, because only your doctor that has looked at your eye can tell you really what's the best scenario. One other point I wanted to make related to the last couple of calls, two wonderful testimonies of how you can keep your sight, even if you have glaucoma, and continue to function well. One of the things that I've noticed recently, well, not just recently, but it's really come to the forefront recently, is the issue of how glaucoma can affect your ability to drive. Because when we encourage people to take their treatment and do what they have to do to try to maintain their sight, sometimes persons don't always think about what if you're reluctant to do your treatment, or you have doubts about what you're doing, or you're not really taking it so seriously because you can't feel what the eye drops are doing. You still feel you can see good, even though we tell you you have glaucoma. So you don't really feel committed to this treatment. But I really want to encourage people to, you know, stick to their treatment and do what they need to do, because one of the things that can happen as you lose vision from glaucoma is if you lose significant peripheral vision, it's going to affect your ability to drive and you will not be able to continue to drive. And if you are somebody that drives in Barbados, you may have children to take to school, you have to drive to work, you might have an elderly relative to drive and take care of, you might just like driving to the supermarket, driving to church. You have that independence. And particularly as you get older, anything you can do to preserve your independence is important. And driving becomes a big part of that. And it's very hard for us when we see people get to a certain point where they've lost so much vision that they have to give up driving. That's actually one of the early things that the vision impacts, and people have to give up driving because that's a public safety issue. And I want patients to understand that we're not stopping you from driving because we're mean. We're doing it for safety, your own safety and the safety of the public. Because in low light conditions, particularly dim conditions, particularly at night, it can be very difficult if it's an overcast day. It can be very difficult if you have a peripheral vision problem from glaucoma for you to judge if a pedestrian is stepping into the road. If you're in a poorly lit road, if a pedestrian is walking at the side of the road, that's what you're using your peripheral vision for, particularly in the face of oncoming lights and oncoming traffic that might dazzle you. This is a public safety issue. And when we say to persons that you're no longer safe to drive, that is what we're thinking of. We are trying to protect you from getting into an accident and to protect you from harming other road users, because we don't want people to be out there doing unsafe things for themselves and the rest of the public. So I want to use that as another reason for persons to really take this seriously. It's, you know, preserving your vision has implications for preserving your quality of life as you get older. And we all want to live a long, but also a healthy life, as healthy as possible. If you have glaucoma, it's at an early stage or even a moderate stage, is within your control to do the things that you need to do to give yourself the best chance of having the best quality of life later.
Okay, caller, thank you kindly. You have a wonderful evening and thank you for your contribution. I've got another one for you, Doc. Let's see if we can access them very quickly. Very good evening. Hello.
Good evening to you.
Yes, please.
Dr. Grosvenor, I have advanced glaucoma. And what has happened to cause it to hemorrhage?
Oh, boy. I am not sure, but you might have other things happening in the eye that could cause it to hemorrhage. Glaucoma on its own is very unusual to cause bleeding because of glaucoma. Usually that might happen if there's one of those secondary causes related to other eye problems, something to do with the blood vessels, diabetes, hypertension, a vein occlusion, something like that. Those things are more...
hypertension.
Those things are more, Okay, those things are more common in terms of hemorrhage. But when you say hemorrhage, do you mean like a bloodshot eye on the surface, or you mean a hemorrhage inside the eyeball?
A hemorrhage inside the eyeball, because when the hands look into the eye, I can also see how the blood is circulating through the thing there. In time it's hemorrhaging, you see, you have to lie down with your head mm-hmm. back and front, and then it will eventually go away after a while.
But right, so we... Right. So when you go back to your doctor, you must ask them what the hemorrhage is, what is causing the hemorrhage, because it's not the glaucoma that's causing that. It might be something else that's going on there. So definitely ask that question when you go back to your doctor. That's one for you to write down or to remember to ask, what is causing the hemorrhage.
You didn't get the voice. This is Patricia.
Hi, Patricia.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Patricia. Thank you, Kaimi. You have a good evening. And now that you brought that up with the doctor, this what Supper is asking, basically the same thing, I guess, is there any cure for bleeding at the back of the eye? That's a question for you, Doc. Can you help them?
This is just showing how, you know, many eye diseases that we have that can coexist. Things that can happen all at once, and how, you know, bleeding inside the eye is usually related to a problem with the blood vessels at the back of the eye, the retina. That's a different set of problems from glaucoma, but those are often related to diabetes and hypertension. Hypertension causing blocked blood vessels or vein occlusion. High cholesterol is also a risk factor for that. Even though I highlight glaucoma as a leading cause of blindness, you can hear just from what the callers are saying that retinal problems are a major issue in our population as well. And you can imagine that that would be the case because of the NCDs they're associated with. We're always talking about how important diabetes and hypertension are in our population, and you're hearing it coming out in the callers' eye problems. You know, we can't have a conversation without talking about the complications of those NCDs. Bleeding is one of those complications, and there are different ways to manage that. But again, the callers would, or the person sending the message, you need to ask your doctor specifically for your case, what is the solution?
All right. I've got one last caller for you because time is upon us. So caller, are you there, please?
Yes, sorry to call back.
Yeah, go ahead quickly, please.
Yeah, I have steel pressure tablet, cholesterol tablet, and other tablet, that from another doctor. I would tell you all, psyche tablet. And I find that every time I go by doctors, my pressure will be good. But the thing about it is that my family are diabetic also. And I don't know. But all I can say is that I'm going to tell him what I take for now. And I hope that it don't get any worse. But if it get worse, I will move off. I'm looking at it as quick as possible, which is obvious. But I didn't forget to tell you all that before when they call you all. But all I can tell you all is thanks for everything.
All right, sir. Thank you kindly. And you have a wonderful evening.
Take care.
All right. Take care. All right, okay. Dr. Lewis.
I want to say thank you to our callers. We have had some very, very excellent questions this evening. You've made my job very easy because you asked many of the questions that I would have wanted to ask Dr. Bogner. And as always, she has done an exceptional job at answering your questions and giving you lots and lots of information. And I think one of the takeaways here is the importance of screening, making sure that you're not only going to your GP, but you're also going to your eye doctor as well, your ophthalmologist, and having your eyes checked. And for those with chronic diseases, because we've had that brought to the forefront, as it always comes to the forefront with any discussion, diabetes, the hypertension, those risk factors, the importance of getting the back of your eyes properly checked at least once a year. So we're discussing glaucoma. We want to remind people that all of these things can coexist. And so we need to be checking. Prevention is better than cure. And in some cases, there are no cures. So prevention is what it is. Yes? And that's certainly applicable here. Dr. Grobner, we've talked a lot. And I wanted to talk a little bit about diagnosis and normal eye pressures and all of that. But I think we've put a lot of useful information out there already for the public. And so what I want you to do, I want you to tell us briefly about the activities that are coming up for Glaucoma Week. I want to give you the opportunity to share on that. And then given that you are our guest, I want you to, if there's one thing that you want Barbados to take away as it relates to glaucoma, eye health, whatever it might be, I want you to give those closing remarks for us.
All right. So for this week, there are going to be opportunities to get free eye testing at various ophthalmology and optical centers or optometry centers, the places you would normally go to get your glasses done, places, the private eye doctors, they're opening their doors at different every day this week, Monday to Friday, at all around the country. Now, the list of these testing centers, they're available for free testing. The list of those free testing centers is available on our social media pages, which is Instagram, Barbados Glaucoma Week, or Facebook at Barbados Glaucoma Week, or persons can call 826-1580. That's 826-1580 to get that information from tomorrow. They can also email glaucomaweek@gmail.com, glaucomaweek@gmail.com. On Friday, we are celebrating ophthalmic nursing, and we have a CME and expo at the QEH at 2:30 in the afternoon in the auditorium. And on Friday, we're asking the whole country as well, even if you don't get involved in any of these other things, wherever you are, do something green for glaucoma, because green is the color for glaucoma awareness. So we want the country to go green for glaucoma. Wear green to work, cook a meal with green, decorate your workspace, house something with green, just do something green to show that you are marking this awareness day on Friday. That's the day we want the whole country to go green for glaucoma. You asked if there is, my main message to persons is, don't forget about glaucoma when you're thinking about your general health. Get your eyes checked for it, because anything that you can do to empower yourself is to your benefit. Don't wait for your doctors to be advising and trying to push you. We can only advise. We can only give the information, but we want to empower patients with that information so they can now go out there and make the difference for themselves.
All right, excellent. I want to thank you, Dr. Goffner. Let me say to the public, I want to remind you, glaucoma is the leading cause of irreversible blindness in Barbados. But the good news is, if we catch it early, you can live a normal life. As you've heard many callers call in and contribute, you can live a normal life. You can preserve your vision. We know that there's free eye screening going on. We all like freeness. I might turn up at somebody's clinic this week because I like freeness as well. So you have no excuse. If you haven't had checked, please check out the Facebook and the end. There should be no shame in yours. Let's go and take care of our eyes. I want to encourage each and every Barbadian to get involved in this glaucoma week. With that, again, thank you so much, Dr. Govner, for taking your time, for speaking to us with so much passion, for giving us all that information. We are very grateful. And to our wonderful callers, you really do make this show very special. Thank you for your ongoing support. Thank you for, you know, all of your contributions. And Gregson, as usual, it is a pleasure to be here with you. Until next week, good evening, and I wish you a good and productive week.
All right. Thank you kindly. That's Dr. Kia Lewis, your presenter this evening of the Better Health Radio Show. And she had on deck with her Dr. Dawn Grosner. And together, they gave you a very informative show. Thank you for your participation. Look out for, is it Dr. Lewis next week? Is it?
Right, so we like to keep things interesting.
All right, so there you go. You got to listen out and find out who will be on deck next week. But for sure, God's willing, we'll be here to keep you company with some more information. Dr. Lewis, thank you. Dr. Grosner, thank you. And have a wonderful evening. Take care.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.